Hello again, and welcome back to Two Guys in the Neighborhood. I'm Bruce Carlisle, and with me again is the Sage of Verona, Mr. Mark Popovich.
Bruce, it's a lovely afternoon to be here. A little fog this morning. The marine layer kind of came in a little bit, cooled us down for today after that heat of last week.
Yeah, it was tough to get through that heat.
Tough to get through the heat, so it's a lot better now, and I'm just happy that we're here. Summer's almost coming to a close.
You kept your word for us, as we had two podcasts in a row. That is amazing.
It was important for me to show our listeners that we were serious.
It's time to focus and gear up for the upcoming sweeps. Now, we just want to let you know that Two Guys in the Neighborhood is sponsored by the Proletarian Brewery Company and their beer, The Mayor, the official brew of the Red, White, and Blue.
Ah, The Mayor. Big doings coming for The Mayor this fall, I feel like.
The Mayor was at two different weddings that I was at. If you don't have the mayor at your wedding, you are missing out on solid wedding nuptials.
Absolutely. I think the mayor is a sign of not just class, but forward thinking and the brews you serve your people.
I like that. So a lot of stuff to get through, even though we don't have weeks of stuff to catch up on. There's a lot of interesting TV that is going around right now.
A lot of different things going on in the TV landscape. Well, first and foremost, something we haven't had a chance to talk about. Did you see yesterday's big announcement from NBC?
Not from NBC.
The Office is going to be its final season.
Oh, okay. I did see that.
That is official. And they're bringing back Greg Daniels to run the show.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Greg Daniels would have been the showrunner the first few years of the show. He's come back. And I think that paves the way for a Steve Carell two or three episode arc, I think, sometime in the spring as well.
Didn't he say he does not want to go back?
He did say he does not want to go back. But what else is Steve Carell doing? He was hanging out with Keira Knightley for The End of the World. That didn't go so well.
No, but he was also the voice of reason why two old people rekindled their love, and I forget what that was called.
Hope Floats.
Was it Hope Floats?
It was not Hope Floats.
I was like, I think it was.
Hope Floats, I believe, was a 95 movie starring Sandra Bullock post-Speed.
Yeah, that feels more right, but I forget whatever. Whatever had Meryl Streep and Tommy Lee Jones as two baby boomers trying to get their groove on.
You know what? We need more taking care of the baby boomers if there's one thing this country needs.
And I feel like they're underrepresented.
Underrepresented, I believe, as well, yeah. So you don't think Steve Carell's coming back?
I think he might come back for the finale if there's going to be one. I don't know if he's got two episodes in him.
I'd like to see a little check-in on him and Holly.
I would like that as well. I would like to have a little check-in about him and Holly. I would like to have him, even if they don't have to check, just have Jim and Pam come out and visit them. Because you know how much he really wanted their affection, I guess, their friendship.
I bet Holly and Michael have kids, but have at least one kid by now.
I hope, well, it's unfortunately the time frame is there. I hope that the kid acts out weirdly.
That could be fun.
So that's not too bad. The other thought I thought you were talking about with NBC, Michael J. Fox is going to have a show on NBC.
He's coming back, which NBC at this point, I think, is willing to put anybody with any name recognition in front of a camera.
Well, I'll give Michael J. Fox credit. I don't think he's had a show get canceled, which is rare for people that dabble in television.
Yeah, Family Ties.
Spin City,
which he left
right
on his own terms.
It was still a really popular show.
It was a popular show. Yeah. All right, Michael J. Fox. Come on. Now, we've seen him. His Parkinson's has progressed.
Right.
So I'm interested in how they incorporate that into the show, I think.
I feel like his character has to have Parkinson's.
I would imagine so.
I feel like having an arc like that is the only reason that you got him back in front of a camera.
He did have a very good, funny episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm last season where Larry David was trying to figure out whether or not Michael J. Fox was either pissed at him or whether it was just the Parkinson's. Pissed or Parkinson's? It was a big question.
So moving on to... I feel that it's trying to become very much Curb Your Enthusiasm-like. Louie.
I would not say Louie's trying to become Curb.
And here's how they're trying to become...
You don't like Curb. You don't watch Curb. How can you make this comparison?
Can I finish before you get all uppity?
I will defend my highfalutin TV, but continue.
Here's the reason why. Is because what Seinfeld, which was a Larry David Krish, and Curb Your Enthusiasm is good at is... taking a normal situation and then trying to make it as weird as possible. Whereas there's a light thematic thread that runs episode to episode, especially with Seinfeld. It wasn't necessarily like the show, like The West Wing, a show that drew itself forward,
right.
Or Friends, where they were trying to go get married and find boy. Seinfeld just kind of ran.
Right.
And they would find, in the course of human life, to find something that is entertaining and kind of interesting, and then make it wacky, because you could almost see yourself in that situation, but it is so much more than...
Here's what I'll say the difference is. I would say that Seinfeld was a much more, I don't want to say realistic, but those were more real-life scenarios, like having to be becoming the godparents for a friend that you're not that close with. That's something that could happen to you very easily. I would say that Louis takes a far more, I don't want to say perverse, but wackier turn at things.
I think they
on purpose.
Right. But I mean, how many you see how many times have you're like, "Oh, I'll take the one episode where he was hanging out. He was going to spend the day with his oldest daughter."
Right.
And sure enough, this person comes in and is like, "Hey, can you watch my son for like a few hours?" And him trying to be the nice guy gets stuck into watching a kid.
Which was really funny.
Which is funny, but I feel like this episode, the first two seasons was kind of like, Louis's life was terrible, but he's trying to live it in New York and make it as a comic. This season, I feel, is more like he's already made it as a comic. And we're just going to find something wacky that we're going to talk about each week, whether it be having to take care of somebody's kids or going to IKEA with somebody or having to see your strange father. Like, there's not necessarily a thematic thread that's going through this season. It's just more of, hey, this is funny. I'm going to try to date. And that was one episode. Oh, somebody I was bad to in my past, I'm going to try to rekindle that and try to make amends for what I did. But they don't necessarily... So far, the only consistency is Sarah Silverman out of nowhere.
Well, Sarah Silverman, who has been quite funny.
She's done a great job on this show.
I have thoroughly enjoyed her on the show. The last episode with his dad and stuff, I thought that was really good. I loved F. Murray Abraham as his Uncle X.
Yes.
And the great middle finger gag. That was amazing. I laughed all the way through that. I loved the poker game.
I did love
the poker game with the comedians. I thought there were a lot of little funny vignettes that pieced together. To me, I mean, even at the end when he shows up at his father's house and he gets in the fight with the guy behind him, that guy, Louis from Boston. That's why I don't come back here. People hate you people for this. You know, the guy calls him a queer and then they hug it out. You know, like, I thought all those things sort of rang true. Honestly, the only thing that when the episode ended, I felt like that episode had 5 more minutes left in it.
I know. Maybe I was the only, Amanda didn't like this episode either. Maybe because it struck a little bit closer to home to me. I loved it. I got it. I was a fan. I understood where he was coming from. I love the fact that he just stole a random bike and drove through the streets of Boston and then hopped on a random boat and just took it out to the ocean. And at that point, he was like, "I'm okay." And he could just be out surrounded by water. I was okay with that.
So that made sense. That rang true for you.
Oh, made complete sense to me.
Okay. Well, maybe I couldn't identify enough with it for it to make sense to me.
Maybe I can, but it was definitely one of those things where, I don't know. I just felt that it was a great episode. It was a great idea. As a big fan.
Well, I'm glad. I think Louis has been another strong season. It's a show people should definitely be watching if they're not.
Yes.
And now a show that you recommended us watch last year.
Oh, Hell on Wheels. Hell on Wheels is back.
And?
I think I had one or two on the DVR where I was going to dabble back in, but I couldn't quite pull the trigger on it.
So now they have lost. They had 4 viewers.
Yeah.
Now they're down to 3.
I'm shocked that one. That one, The Killing got canceled and right. That still made it.
Well, do you know who else watches Hell on Wheels?
Alan Sevenwald, because he's forced to?
No.
Who?
Jack O, Bill Simmons' friend.
Does he say anything positive about it?
He likes it.
I told him, like, the idea...
He said he thinks it's just him and Common's mom who are the only people left that watch that show.
I agree, because as I said months ago, I love the premise. I love the fact that it's post-Civil War. You're trying to bring a country back together. You can, you know, many of the same themes that we live through today. You get the guy's a Southerner and all the hostility he faces because they just know his last name. They know that's a Southern last name. It just didn't execute well for me. I felt the writing was weak in a lot of parts where you had the various class struggles where you either have like Common trying to be like, "No, I'm a freed person now. I am now afforded a level of respect that I just, the writing was choppier. It just didn't work. The construct to me didn't work, which is why this new show that I'm about to pitch to you, which you you have to watch, is I understand the hype, and I was initially turned off on it because of the hype, is Downton Abbey.
Okay.
Have you watched
that? I have not watched any of Downton Abbey.
I cannot recommend it enough.
Really?
It's two seasons. The third season starts in January.
Okay.
7 episode seasons, 1 hour episodes.
Classic British.
But the thing that I like about it is, and the thing that makes me nervous now with all this groundswell of support, is that are they going to change that? Because I feel that they do a very good job. Each episode plays as if it's like you're watching a movie. And the only other show that I can say, or two other shows that I can say that, is The West Wing. I felt like you were watching The American President and those guys. Okay. Also Sorkin. But you felt like you were watching this like intense political drama, and then the hour ended.
Right.
I feel that Breaking Bad does a very good job of that.
I would say.
Now, Downton Abbey, more Emmy nominations than Breaking Bad.
True.
Only less than Mad Men, and surprisingly, American Horror Story.
Which that made no sense to me.
Okay, you as a Connie Britton fan, I thought you'd have been excited.
I'm a Connie Britton fan, but I wasn't going to watch American Horror Story.
So, started watching. The first episode is good. You'll like it because there's a lot of franticness going out. They flash the date.
Isn't it in World War I-ish?
It's, well, here's the thing. It starts in 1912, and I don't want to give what the start is, because if you watch it with Kristen, you can tell exactly what's happening. You get to feel really good about your
history. I can't wait till Gabriela Princip makes an appearance.
He does.
Yes.
Well, he doesn't actually show up. They mention, so it starts in 1912.
All right.
Season one goes 1912 through the Declaration of War.
Okay. So that chaotic summer, the July crisis of 1914.
Yeah. You hear stuff, because I mean, the thing that I like about it is there's the servant stories, which are, you know, okay. And then there's the Lord, and you have the class ranks, and you hear a lot of stuff about people talking about like, hey, we're not going to be servants forever. Guys that are socialist and no one's really batting their eyes.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And the second season takes place during World War II. Or World One, sorry.
I was going to say, well, that's a big
That's a
time
large really. Jump. No, World War One, and you do a very good job of like how the war touches the whole lives. How this is really, and I feel like this time period also doesn't get a lot of love. In the sense that it's very tough to understand the alliance system.
Well, this goes back to a larger concept. There was the movie that came out, War Horse.
Oh, yes.
It's a World War I movie. And I remember talking with some other people about, you know, there's no really great World War I movies. Like, if you were going to talk about World War II, there's 50 good movies you could say that portray World War II. And I think World War I is really hard because it's hard for people to understand because there's no bad guy.
Right.
There's no evil. It's there's no moral cause for the war. It's the biggest waste of 9 million lives in the history of humankind.
I agree. And I feel like they do a very good job of showing either survivors. The people that come back from the front aren't speaking glowingly of war, whether it be the aristocracy that were the officers or the servant people that got drafted in various positions.
The other show that really does a good job of showing that is Boardwalk Empire. Because two of the characters in the first two seasons are World War I vets.
Okay.
And so it does a very good job showing how the war affected them, so that you can kind of see that.
But I feel like the only difference between the two, and I'm not going to knock Boardwalk Empire, is the American people, because of the propaganda, were generally shielded from all the stuff that was going on.
Till Christy Mathewson got tuberculosis and died, yeah.
But the other parts, with it being in England, they couldn't have cast it better. The nominees that they had for lead actor, he's okay. I mean, he's a great actor. He's not going to beat John Hamm. He's not going to beat Bryan Cranston. But I feel like where it's a little bit better, they're supporting actors. Well, I'll be interested to see how, because the first season, they ran in the like miniseries category and swept.
Are they now being?
They're in the big
now
boys.
Now they're in the big boys.
They
okay.
bumped John Slattery and Hugh Laurie to get those guys in.
Wow.
So it's interesting. Like, it's very well acted.
Okay.
And the fact that it's only 7 episodes.
The Emmys are in a couple weeks. It's gonna be exciting.
I will bet right now on Downton.
All right. Now, because speaking of class
warfare,
We have the Bachelor Pad.
And I feel like that is a great segue as we get in through this, because the aristocracy definitely raised their hands.
And I'm going to tell you right now, I know just from our preliminary, from our production discussions, we disagreed on this episode.
I'm going to save that part for, I'm just going to be happy. I'm just going to start with.
We'll just go through the rundown. Yeah, let's see where it takes.
I love the fact that Chris's plan blew up in his face. I had never been a fan of Chris. He was a guy who was too big for his britches.
Absolutely.
We discussed this last week. His plan backfires. Blakely stays. And the thing that I love the best is Blakely wins the competition.
Well, I want to talk about the competition for a second, because I think it's really interesting. Before that, one, we had Chris comes back and he's pissed that all his friends lied to him saying they would vote Blakely out. And Kaylin goes, yeah, I'm a liar. Like, are you shocked? Like, I lied to you. That's what I do. I'm Kaylin, okay? So that was really funny. And Ed and Chris have a stupid fight. But then the challenge was called the Great Fall of China, which I thought was very... The pun department worked overtime on that one.
Someone in a production meeting giggled and said, has anyone got anything better? All right, let's go.
Yeah. But anyways, it involved basically stacking cups and saucers. You had to stack six of them and take them. And everybody's pissed because Blakely has an advantage because she said she worked at Hooters for 13 years.
She worked at Hooters for 13 years?
That's what she said. 13 years. That's not a job. That's a career at that point.
I would like to think so. Then how is that a VIP cocktail waitress?
I asked that same question.
Okay.
I got to think that she took all this Hooters experience and parlayed it into working at like a nightclub or something.
Or she didn't get to be on like the Miss Hooters competition.
Maybe,
sometime,
I don't know. But I thought that was interesting. But anyways, this challenge turned out to be quite hard. That stacking is hard.
The only thing is, maybe we're losing out in semantics. We always put it as a VIP cocktail waitress, meaning she only served VIPs. Maybe if she had been so high up in Hooters.
That's her title.
Yeah, she was the VIP.
That's a really good point.
I think that's really what her title is. She didn't actually serve in a higher class place.
She just was the higher class waitress.
Correct.
Wow, way to go, Blakely. So Blakely was there, and Sarah actually wins, but she gets DQ'd because she touched her top cup.
Hey, which was specified in the rules at the beginning.
Absolutely, okay. And then not only does Blakely win, but she leads her new partner, Tony, to victory.
I loved that. She looked like Coach K. She's marching the sideline. She's barking orders.
She was great.
I think she was a great coach.
It reminded me of how great she was in the softball game.
I see Chris was made smart in the one thing. I want to partner with Blakely because she is the best athlete in that group. But Chris got too big for his britches and wanted to date all sorts of other girls, and Blakely was about the money.
Absolutely. So now her and Tony are together as a pair, and since they both win, they got to give a rose to whoever they wanted to.
Correct.
And Blakely gave her rose to Kaylin.
Mm-hmm.
Which was definitely an alliance strategical choice. And so Kaylin and Lindsay get the pretty woman date.
Yes. Nothing gets better.
Better than simulating, you know, somebody being a prostitute for an evening.
She didn't want to kiss on the lips. She didn't want to fall in love or get herpes.
So they get the date on the bridge.
Now, they had a choice. Do you think, which one, even with hindsight, would you have taken the Bentley Bridge date or during Carmageddon, or the second date out camping?
I take the second date.
Same here.
Even though I hate camping, you can at least sleep in the Airstream. You don't have to sleep out with the bugs. You get to spend a night away.
I think that's the bigger thing.
That's the bigger thing. And three, you got a chance of getting lucky. You got Blakely there.
I'm not going to be the next person that piles on Blakely. I think she's just a girl that wants to find love, which is why it's kind of nice. Tony's at least...
I think her and Tony are at least emotionally in the same place. Like, they both want it so bad, like, they're going to find each other, I think.
I think so. I think he will definitely take it. I think what she wants more than anything is 100% loyalty. And I think Tony will give that in the sense that she is much hotter than any person I could ever date.
Yeah.
I will be 100%.
I ain't going to mess this up. I'm Tony. I know a good thing when I see it. And I'm just a little lumber salesman from the Pacific Northwest. This is as great as it gets.
Yeah, I definitely think that.
Now, Kaylin and Lindsay are falling for each other, and Lindsay says she sees a different side of Kaylin. Did you see a different side of Kaylin?
I have seen a different side of Kaylin. I think where Kaylin is humanized in the sense is the fact that he seems very loyal to her. Yes, he lies, but this is the bachelor pad. This isn't the bachelorette. Like, you expect, I think he does a very good job of playing both sides. Usually the neutrals, the ones that get exposed as being frauds very early on, and he's done a very good job of hiding his neutrality, or like he said, saying, yeah, I lied because I thought this was the worst play. Obviously other people agreed with me. You know, you're the one who's making mistakes and finding a way to keep Chris on his side. So I feel like that's just playing a great game.
Kaylin is playing a very good game. They get to parlay their date into making out on top of a car. I don't know if they have to pay Sarah royalties for that.
Hey, you give very little time with that Bentley. You might as well make it count.
But they seem like they are going very well, and according to my wife, they are still together today.
Oh, wow. Good for them.
So we cut back to the house, and Chris's new strategy is to send home Lindsay.
Which is Chris being self-destructive.
Absolutely.
Which would have been an interesting thing to see. Now, before, are we going to talk about Blakely's date anymore?
We're going to talk about Blakely's date with Tony.
Okay, just making sure.
All right, so Blakely and Tony, they get the overnight date, and they get to ride in the truck from Fools Rush In.
Wow.
Which my wife was very excited about. She loved that car. My wife wants that truck.
Wow.
I don't know why.
It's because both Selma Hayek and Matthew Perry were in that?
Two of her favorites. So, yeah. That was the truck from Fools Rush In.
Was it really?
I don't know if it was the exact truck, okay. But it's the same make and model. So they get to basically have the hangout in a camp by a trailer date.
Camp
barbecue.
A little barbecue, a little outside, a little sunshine. You know, I agree with you. I think the Airstream's a nice little place you can go in. I think they fooled themselves in thinking they were going to Vegas. I guess the Holly Blake date, they went out to the mountains.
Yeah. The overnight date, that makes you think you're getting to go somewhere pretty good.
I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of – you could go to Morongo and still have an overnight date.
It's true. The one thing I will say that Chris was definitely right about, Blakely talks a lot.
Well, I'm sure that's a level of insecurity.
I mean, she just talks.
Well, and that's probably good. It's not like Tony's known for his dynamic personality. Well,
that's a good point.
Are we done with that? Because I don't know. Did you catch when they were dancing what the song was?
No, I did not. It's some awful country song.
It's Wes's Love Don't Come Easy.
No.
It's the same song.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
Wow.
They finally apparently got it produced because that was the song.
That is that. Wow. Well, one, good for Wes. And two, way to go, Bachelor, for just that. That is some vertical integration right there.
I don't know why that hasn't become the official song of the Bachelor pad.
Wow. So Tony's move was to dance by the car. He gets a makeout session from that.
As Wes serenades them.
Stags made his own one-on-one date with Rachel.
Which was smart. That was nice of him.
Absolutely. And if you're with Rachel, I mean, come on.
He was the Angie Harmon Husky Voice Award winner?
I'm a huge fan of Rachel.
Is it the bangs?
She's the only, honestly, I'm not a huge fan of those bangs normally, but I think Rachel's the hottest chick at the pad.
That's remaining?
Who was hotter than her to
begin with? I was always a fan of Jamie, but... That was before she started becoming...
Rachel's hotter than Jamie. Rachel's hotter than Jamie. But it is becoming like Noah's Ark. Like, everybody is pairing off.
Well, I
with the exception of poor Jacqueline and Ed.
Oh, poor Jacqueline. She wanted more. Ed was treating Bachelor Pad for what it was. And he didn't want to play false pretenses.
Which, in a way, you have to... I don't want to say applaud...
I have nothing against it.
But, like, he's at least being honest. Yeah, like, he wasn't... There's nothing false going on there. Like, Ed is just having a good time.
Yeah.
He's not looking for love.
Getting drunk and swearing at oven mitts.
Yeah, which is fun.
Yeah, I have nothing against him.
Now, after their date, Blakely's excited because she thinks Tony's a real man. She says that Tony is a real domesticated man.
I remember that. Would you like to be called a domesticated man?
No.
I think the word she was like, I get her context that she wanted to
say. She could say responsible.
A gentleman.
Grown up, a gentleman. An adult.
Right.
But domesticated makes it sound like you already cut off his balls and put them in your purse.
Oh, no, I agree. I think she was looking for a bigger word and chose wrong. I don't think that she meant...
Does Blakely have bigger words?
Well, she had domesticated, but she didn't quite use it.
So we head to the cocktail party, and right as the cocktail party starts, Chris Harrison comes in with a twist.
And this is where they lose me. I get that Survivor has twists, and they float the merger.
I've never watched Survivor ever.
I mean, basically, you have two tribes. You start winnowing down one person from each tribe, or the losing tribe, you know. And then eventually they merge into one new tribe, and they start winnowing more people down, right? And, like, the goal is your tribe wins more than the other tribe, so you have more people.
Right.
Okay. So, eventually, at some point in the season, like, Jet Propes will come wandering into their camp and say, pack your stuff, we're merging tribes. And you've known that because that trope's been going on for 20 seasons or however long it's been on. I feel with the Bachelor Pad, they want Chris. I don't know why they want Chris. Maybe all the other people think he's dreamy. That Gerard Butler lookalike is something. So I feel like they rigged the game to save him.
Really?
I can't get over the fact he was going to go home. He was destined to be out the door. And then they rigged it.
All right, well, here's my favorite part of this, okay? Yeah, Chris feels like he's got a new lease on life, and he can, you know, if they can get the right person out, they can take somebody from the big alliance. Here's why I like this move, okay? I like this one because it does change the game, and we actually get somebody from my power couple broken up. Gia's dream finally comes true, okay? All right, two, I wish I would have wrote down who said this, but they said, we can't afford to lose Michael. Like, they were people were afraid of losing Stacks.
He was the godfather.
We can't afford to lose him? Like, is he that amazing? Is he that charismatic? Is his breakdancing that good?
That makes me angry. So he's that charismatic, that good, and built that good of an alliance by playing by the rules in which they set by. Oh, but there's a twist. And for some reason, he gets to be the person that, like, to try to knock him off his position.
Well, and Staggs has a good play with trying to convince Erica that Chris is leading the vote out against him, and then Chris makes the best play of all to bring her into the voting booth with him.
Right.
Which I think is illegal.
Yes, I agree. I think it is also illegal. Because why would that stop somebody else from being like, you need to go vote for, let's just say you need to go vote for Mark right now. Here, let me take you in there so we can make sure this happens.
Yeah. And so then, of course, the vote happens the way, unfortunately, for Mike, where Erica Rose is the one that gets voted out. She takes Staggs with him, and she starts just calling him out about all sorts of ridiculous things. She even makes a comment to him about, like, this is why Holly left you or something like that. And Staggs has my favorite line of that. He goes, this is not going well. This is not going well. This is not what I wanted.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like somehow Mike Fleiss and the rest of the Bachelor crew is like, I'll be damned if I give another $125,000
to Stagliano.
To Stagliano. Like, I don't know. Maybe Stag, you know, like, I don't want to subsidize Stag swag with another Bachelor Pad win. So they had to find a way to bump him off.
Well, and so I think now this does change the game in a way.
I don't care. Like, call me a reality show Republican. I believe the free market should work. I don't need government intervention. I don't want it. I don't think it's fair. I think they should be allowed to fight it out under the rules in which they started.
Are you also only investing in gold?
Yes. I'm only investing. And you know who's gold right now? I'm going to say the person who's going to win is going to be Ed and Jacqueline. And like only because they want someone to pick a keep share. And it's going to be, she's going to choose to keep it. Or they both are going to hate each other. They're both going to choose to keep it. And the whole cast wins. And it's Stag swag for everyone.
That would be amazing.
I think that's the only other play. If not, who else would you want to see win it at this stage?
Who do I want to see win it?
Yeah.
I would say that I would not mind. I think Tony and Blakely make for a
Tony
nice story.
Tony and Blakely
story.
Would make for a good story.
Kaylin
and Lindsay. Kaylin needs another 125K.
No, I don't want to see Kaylin.
Lindsay's
win
horse farm needs another colt.
No, I don't want to see Kaylin and Lindsay win. Now you've got the thrown together pair of
Nick. How has Nick made it this far? Have you ever made it longer in a reality show with no personality?
Well, who was the guy from Ali's season of the Ashley's season of the Bachelor? The guy that didn't talk the whole time.
The Shadow. I feel like he is the same person.
Yeah, he's like the Shadow. I mean, he's definitely gone next week, probably.
You think so? Maybe he can spell. You finally get your spelling bee.
Oh, I am so stoked for this spelling bee.
Oh, I can't wait.
I can't wait
to butcher every word that they give us.
It's going to be so amazing. I can't wait till you go, wow, I would have won the spelling bee, because I don't think they're giving them that hard of words.
I think you overestimate my ability to spell. Now, the trivia one, I would have done great at. I'd have been fine. But spelling words, I guess it's you and your partner. So you don't, if you've got a decent enough partner,
well,
maybe that would save
you. I feel very confident in my ability to spell. I think I could definitely do well.
Like, if it was Amanda and I would just sit there and smile the entire time. I'd just be like, good luck. Good luck. Try to keep going. Because unless the word happened to be something simple like cat, be like, oh, honey, I got this one. K.
Damn it.
Damn it.
Ketchup, catsup. Ketchup, catsup.
Are you here to help me with my ketchup catsup problem?
And on that note.
All right. I'm Bruce Carlisle.
And I'm Mark Popovich. We will see you next week in the neighborhood.